Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. In this episode, Dr. Anne Cheng from Yale University spoke about the current treatment paradigm for patients with small cell lung cancer. The conversation focused on current standards of care, ongoing research intended to understand disease heterogeneity, and the next steps for improving the prognosis of patients. What do current treatment options look like in the management of small cell lung cancer, or SCLC? And what factors do you consider when sequencing different therapies for patients?
Well, this is an area that I think we need to really focus on because it's going to be changing in the near future. And there's a lot of excitement around that. I think frontline right now, we still stick with our two trials. That's either the IMpower 133 regimen, carboplatin atezo, followed by maintenance atezo, or the Caspian trial, carboplatin or cisplatin durvalumab, followed by maintenance durvalumab. So the exciting part of that is that at ASCO 2025, the IMforte trial read out. And so that's a maintenance trial adding lurbinectedin to the maintenance atezo. And that showed a positive overall survival benefit of 3 months. So that trial, I think now for patients who are fit, and it was conducted in patients who did not have brain metastases, but those patients who are fit after induction therapy, we've been talking to them about doing or switch maintenance with lurbinectedin plus atezo. Now, that's going to affect second line, because right now, second line, we think about two options. One is, well, besides clinical trial, because that's where all our progress is coming from, but we think about lurbinectedin or tarlatamab. And lurbinectedin, if we move that up into the maintenance setting, then we'll really be focusing on tarlatamab. Tarlatamab is a bispecific antibody that engages the T cell system. The two heads of the antibody recognize DLL3 and CD3. Also at ASCO 2025, the phase 3 trial sort of really centering this in our second line, showing the benefit of tarlatamab in the second line setting, places that as our go-to. We're excited because the response rate is 35% to 40%, but patients have a disease control rate upwards of 70%. And the duration of response that patients stay on therapy is on the 9 month in that range. So we think this is a great option for our patients. There are some side effects that give pause or make it logistically a little bit more difficult. Right now, for the first two doses, the step-up dose 1 milligram, 10 milligram in the first 2 weeks, the recommendation is to have inpatient monitoring for CRS, that's cytokine release syndrome, and ICANS, the immune cell neurotoxicity. But I think we're working on ways to manage that in an outpatient setting. There are trials ongoing now that place that in the maintenance, in the limited stage, and in the first line setting. At World Lung 2025, the phase 1b Delphi 303 trial was reported out by Dr. Paulson, who said that basically, in the maintenance setting, you had folks who had overall survival of about 2 years. So this is really terrific news for our patients. The phase 3 trial is ongoing. So I think there's a lot to look at in that space. So if we used tarlatamab and lurbinectedin earlier, then what are we going to do for our patients who progress? And that's where the antibody drug conjugates are so exciting. So for small cell in particular, these are delivering chemo. So chemo is tethered to the antibody. And then we have several different protein targets on the surface of the tumor cell, like CES6, B7H3, DLL3. And all of those agents look really promising. Right now, response rates in the upwards of 50% in the second or further heavily pre-treated setting, that's really exciting. The CES6 antibody, if you looked at those patients who were in their second line of treatment, that response rate went up to 80%. So for that drug, they just released the design of a trial that's going to be using CES6 plus immunotherapy in the frontline setting. So getting rid of the platinum doublet. Wow, that's amazing. And there are other trials with tarlatamab and other ADCs that are replacing different components of the platinum doublet. So I think our frontline strategy or algorithm for treating small cell is going to be radically different in the next 5 to 10 years. So really super exciting, even less than that, probably two to three years.
Thank you for a very great overview of everything, especially across the different treatment settings and lines. And I know you went a little bit into some of the novel therapeutics in the ongoing trials. Was there anything else that you want to say regarding the novel therapeutics that may hold the most promise in improving treatment outcomes in this patient population?
Let's talk about subtypes. So the biology of small cell, we're learning more about. And one of the aspects is, can we, just like the strategy in non-small cell, where we started to understand the heterogeneity, can we start to dial in our therapies for different subtypes? And I'll talk about a trial that is a cooperative group, it's S29-2409 PRISM trial that I happen to be the chair of, but there's a whole slew of people that have been involved, including my co-chair, Alberto Chapori, and Carl Gay and Lauren Byers at MD Anderson. So this trial is a maintenance trial, and it leverages our need to understand subtypes. In the PRISM trial, we're going to have over 800 patients where we ask for tissue during their frontline induction therapy with chemo IO. And then based on their subtype, are they A, N, P, or I, and what their SLOFN-11 status is by IHC, then those patients will be randomized to the biomarker-directed therapy plus IO versus IO. So if you're a neuroendocrine subtype, A or N, and you're SLOFN-11 positive, you'll get a PARP inhibitor, a plus IO versus IO. If you're subtype I, you're going to get monalizumab, which is an NK cell activator, plus the IO versus IO alone, and so forth. So we're really excited about that trial. It's a prospective trial. And most of all, we're going to be getting tissue from a slew of patients so that we can move the field forward. So very excited about that.
Great. Thank you for getting into detail about those next steps. And in terms of the community-based practices, what can be done to further optimize the care of patients with lung cancer, maybe SCLC specifically, in community-based settings?
Education and really communicating the advances that are happening is really important. I think there's still a bit of nihilism about the prognosis of our patients. And for small cell, this is a disease that 5 years ago, most patients had an overall survival of a year. Now we're seeing with the addition of immunotherapy to the frontline regimen that about 18% make it to 3 years. And for your 5 and 6 year overall survival, you have about 10% of the patients making it there. Now, obviously, we'd still push that envelope, but I think that we need to understand, again, exploring and leveraging our understanding of the biology, how can we impart that benefit to more patients? But in order to do that, we need to get them treated, and we need to get them treated early on. There are trials now that are much more pragmatic than before. I'm seeing those trials that allow patients with brain metastases that are asymptomatic to go on. I'm seeing trials that allow patients to have a first cycle of chemo before they go on to clinical trial. And both of those are basically classic elements of clinical trials that patients couldn't go on because of that.
I see. And thank you for that. Moving on, can you also speak to the importance of employing patient-reported outcomes in cancer management? And what kind of role might these patient-reported outcomes play in small cell or lung cancer specifically?
Employing patient-reported outcomes allows us to hear directly from the patient. We do that anyway, but I think being able to focus on that really makes sure that we're including them in that shared decision-making and that's sort of a focus in clinical trials as well. It may not be as easy as just sort of saying, okay, this is what I hear and this is what we're going to do, but understanding from the patient point of view, which is, I think, what we're really trying to do nowadays, is have a patient-centric approach. It makes sense to hear directly from the patient and capture that for understanding which therapies are going to be the best for the patient. Now we are starting to have different options for our patients with lung cancer, but understanding which patients are having which side effects and how that's really impacting their life is super important.
I know we've talked about a lot of the current options for small cell as well as the ongoing initiatives, but looking ahead towards the future, where, in your opinion, does the field need to go in order to further improve the prognosis of those with small cell lung cancer?
As I said before, I think that understanding and leveraging the biology is really important. We're going to need to understand how to sequence therapies, and that involves understanding which patients are at higher risk, number one. Number two, which biomarkers can we use? We're still struggling to understand how to use our biomarkers. Number three, we need to understand the heterogeneity of which treatments will work for each group of patients, and ultimately how to manage side effects as well. So I think those are different options. We need to look at high-risk populations, for example, patients with brain mets, and understand which therapies are especially useful for them. That's an area of unmet need. And I think we need to learn how to cure these patients too. So I want to keep that on the table and maybe utilizing CAR T therapies or things that really can teach the immune system long-term how to recognize cancer cells is important to keep in mind.
Considering everything we talked about today, what do you hope others take away from this conversation?
I hope that people really get a feeling for the excitement in lung cancer, especially in small cell, that there really are paradigm-changing events that are occurring in real time, that we have really exciting agents that are active and going to move the needle for our patients. And as we move them in the first line setting, earlier in the limited stage setting, I think this is really super exciting for our patients. So I hope people get a sense that there are things that are happening, that we're really marrying the biology and our understanding of the biology with therapeutics with success.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.